For CertSecurity.com, I'm Rob Westervelt.
And I'm Bill Brenner.
You're listening to Security Wire Weekly for December 26th, 2007.
In this edition, we take a look at what I consider to be my top five podcasts this year, including segments from the Black Hat and RSA conferences. But first, this message.
Mergers and acquisitions are common in today's rapidly changing business market. And before long, M&A activity will almost certainly have an effect on your organization's enterprise security. Don't be caught by surprise. Start preparing today by checking out CertSecurity.com's Corporate Mergers and Acquisitions Learning Guide. Experts like Michael Cobb and Ed Skotis offer advice on how to successfully integrate compliance efforts, merge network security policies, defend disparate web application infrastructures, and much more. Master the policy practices and people problems of post-merger security. Check out the Corporate Mergers and Acquisitions Learning Guide today. Visit CertSecurity.com and search for mergers and acquisitions. You'll be glad you did.
So let's start with two of my favorites this year, both of which came from live events. Black Hat in Las Vegas in August and RSA in San Francisco in February. At both of these shows, we put out seven or so special podcasts, and I was particularly pleased with the Black Hat segment on VoIP in security. A big theme at the conference was that VoIP is being deployed far faster than anyone's ability to secure it properly, and it seemed like the best focus at the time.
Right. VoIP is a pretty big deal right now.
Absolutely. I mean, the use of it's exploding. The protocols are nowhere near as secure than people think. Because there haven't been any big documented attacks as yet, people are kind of riding along with the assumption that they are secure. And so a lot of researchers at Black Hat were trying to demonstrate ways that they are, in fact, not secure.
Is this the first year that folks have been trying to demonstrate insecurities of VoIP?
No, this is a trend people have been looking at for about 2 years now. Maybe I would even say 3 years. But at this past Black Hat, it was the deepest focus that I've seen yet. And I could be wrong. You know, maybe there was something even deeper out there that I just hadn't attended, but this was the most in-depth focus that I had seen at Black Hat anyway. Himanshu Dwivedi and Zane Lackey of San Francisco-based digital security firm ISEC Partners Incorporated gave a presentation on the various ways attackers can exploit such VoIP protocols as SIP, IAX, and H.323. Here's what they had to say.
Talk, if you can, about what some of the bigger challenges are from a security standpoint when trying to get your arms around these protocols.
So this is Himanshu Dwivedi. I think the primary problems are the solutions aren't quite defined and aren't quite scalable yet, the security solutions. So what happens is that 323 is a very popular enterprise protocol. We have identified a lot of security issues with it. The first question anyone should ask us is, so how do you secure it? Well, the thing is you kind of have to use your own rolled-up version of security with SSL or wrapping things that aren't vendor-supported. And anytime you have to do yourself that aren't vendor-supported into the security isn't very scalable. And that might not be stable. So unfortunately, when people say, okay, we want to do VoIP, how do we do it securely? There's a very short list of answers and not a long list of answers. So the frustration is whether you use 323, IAX, or even SIP, the security story is not very strong. And so you're left with, as a VoIP administrator, you're left with a kind of empty feeling that what do? Do I just accept the risk or do I just ditch VoIP until it's more stable in terms of security?
At RSA, the highlight for me was an interview with security luminary Mark Mayfrey, who recently left EI Digital Security, where he was a co-founder. The interview came only a few weeks after the release of Windows Vista, and Mayfrey was telling me about one of the first Vista flaws that they had just discovered.
And there have been a number of Vista flaws since then.
Yes, in fact, the December 2007 security update from Microsoft had quite a few Vista fixes, and the security experts that I interviewed, including folks at Shavlik and the former PatchLink, they had voiced concern about the volume of Vista problems this time around.
Why is it such a big deal to have the first Vista's flaw? What's so big about that, Bill?
Well, because when a new operating system comes out, especially when you've had months and months of hype about how much more ironclad it is from a security standpoint, it stood to reason that the second this thing became available, every researcher and their grandmother was going to start trying to pick this thing apart for flaws. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what EI found at the time wasn't necessarily something that was going to bring down the sky and the stars and the moon and whatnot and what have you. But at that point, it was one of the first examples of researchers saying, oh, look, there are ways to poke through Vista.
And Mayfrit wasn't the one who discovered this particular flaw, was he?
Well, it was, they were researchers at EI, but Mayfrit, until the time that he left the company, had pretty much been the public face of the company. So,
and today EI is without Mayfrit, right?
That's right. He has left to pursue, quote unquote, special projects. And you'll hear further on in this podcast, one of the other interviews I did with the CEO of EI, denying at the time that EI was having some problems. But Mayfrey's departure would suggest that things aren't quite as rosy as they'd like to have you believe.
Right. So what is EI actually doing now? I mean, has there been any acquisitions? Have there been any interest in EI from some of the larger security vendors?
Not that I've seen. It would not at all surprise me, even though their CEO told me that they're not for sale. Sometime in 2008, we see an acquisition headline and they're in it. Here's what security luminary Mark Mayfrey had to say.
Have you had a chance to start picking around with Vista to see how ironclad it is? Have you found any kinds of weaknesses in there yet? For Vista, they've done a lot of the things, but as I'll demonstrate in the talk that I'm going to do, is basically remote exploit, do whatever you want to the system type vulnerability. Just as everybody's been fighting off for the last few years against Microsoft, and here's Vista, the best thing ever, and it's the exact same attack. And the interesting aspect of it is the vulnerability that I'll show for Vista is actually a vulnerability that's specific to Vista. The vulnerable code only exists in Vista. So with all their efforts, they still make mistakes where they've introduced a vulnerability specific to Vista and doesn't actually even exist in XP and whatnot.
So as I was saying regarding EI and the recent news about Mayfrey leaving the company, we had an interview with company CEO Kamal Arafei over the summer, in which he addressed rumors that incidentally were floating all over Black Hat about EI's health and the company's staying power in the face of all of the acquisitions we've been seeing. And as you'll hear here, he admits that there was some need for restructuring, but at the same time claimed that the overall health of the company was good.
We had a little bit of struggle in being able to address the lion's share of the opportunities that existed in the place. And with that, you know, deflated a little bit of the momentum. What I bring to the table is the ability to kind of retool the sales organization and the marketing focus to basically put its effort back on where the money is, and that is addressing hopefully more than 70% of the market that does touch technology such as ours, whether it's on the VA, which is the vulnerability assessment, or on the endpoint security. So in a very short time, not to sound smart, but in a short time, we're able to kind of reconfigure ourselves and basically start going after a much broader market that has less emphasis on the brand and less emphasis on a variety of different things, but have deep pockets and clearly more out there than the larger fellows engineering.
So were some layoffs necessary as part of that restructure?
Yeah, and I honestly don't like to use layoff, not because it's a taboo word, but it was really, honestly, and I think people think that I'm going to spin on it, it's a reconfiguration, meaning where do we actually put our focus? And our focus was primarily growth, as you would anticipate a CEO or anybody with a financial statement objective.
So I mean, my definition of layoff means person who's laid off no longer has a job.
Right. My point is, I didn't think that my definition of layoff sort of close to yours in a sense, but and our intention was not to lay people off because we were in trouble. We laid people off because the For example, Blink, which is our latest and greatest emphasis, and it's a substantial market, well over 8 billion, as you well know, we added a team to it.
If another company came along, particularly one of the big IT infrastructure vendors, so say, you know, a Cisco or a Microsoft, maybe they're not the best examples, but if another company came along and said, you know, we would like to acquire you and work you into our product line, is that something that you would be eager to do, or is the goal to really keep EI as an independent entity?
Eager is probably a strong word. I think, like anybody, we would entertain anything. I mean, number one, it's flattering. Number two, it kind of gets you in this mode of figuring out what is hot and how can you get better. EI is not up for sale. We are not trying to get the attention of anybody from an M&A kind of standpoint.
During the autumn, I paid a visit to the Massachusetts office of Kaspersky Labs, which is based in Moscow. I met up with company head Eugene Kaspersky, and it was a long-ranging discussion, but among the things I asked him was why, from a cultural standpoint, so much malware seems to originate from his home turf. His suggestion, which I thought was interesting, is that the attitude of a lot of developers of malware tend to think along the same lines as your traditional weapons manufacturers, where they build it, but they're not actually using it, and so they don't necessarily see what they do as an evil. And he also talked about the economic climate in Russia and how there's a lot of fast cash to be made doing this sort of thing. And
it's not even clear how strong the law enforcement is there against this sort of thing.
Yeah, and he alluded to that point. He also, though, defended his home turf a bit and noted that a lot more malware of late has been originating from China, which we have seen plenty of evidence of. Here's what Kaspersky had to say.
It seems that the most complicated Trojans, most complicated malware is coming from Russia. And most of these criminal services is coming from Russia as well. So the hackers, which don't steal money, they just develop the tools to steal money, and they explain it like, well, we are not criminals, because for example, the guns, the factory which developed guns is not responsible for the
they're not shooting
from
people,
the
they're
actions
the weapons,
yes,
else
exactly
it.
Yeah. So they develop these Trojans by request, they develop the zombie networks and they sell it, or they are for rent. They do all this stuff, and technically there are Russians, the Trojans which come from Russia, they are more complicated. And why is in this way? Well, I think there are two reasons for that. It is like that in Russia. First of all, the education system is probably one of the best in the world, so the technical education system is on a high level, and we have a lot of the technical skilled people. And well, actually, what do you think about Russian software developers? I think that in the IT industry, it's a brand of their professional guys which are coming from Russia. And a second reason why we have such a level of criminals in Russia is the economic situation. Well, in Moscow, in St. Petersburg, there are IT people and especially software developers, they're high paid. If we're not counting the taxation, because in Russia taxation is very low, it's just about 13%. That's the most capitalistic country on the globe, I think. At the end, if we count the money in our hands, the Russian developers in Moscow and St. Petersburg, they are paid better than in Europe, probably the same level as in UK, in Norway, but better paid than in France, better than Italy, better than in Germany, But if we talk about the rest of Russia, the salaries are not as high as in Moscow and St. Petersburg. So the people, they have a choice to have a short money by developing software or develop the criminal software and get much, much better income. So I think there are two reasons. And, well, actually, there are also other reasons. It's also mentality, the historical history of the countries, how the people behave in different situations, also their how police behaves. And still in Russia we have a lack of the computer criminal laws. They are not as well developed as in Europe and the United States.
I'd like to end my top five with a segment from our Vista Deployment Pain Points series, where I talked to several IT professionals at various stages of dealing with the latest version of Vista. And in this particular segment, Omar Gayam, Network Administrator for Exco Resources, talked about how certain Vista security features, particularly the user account control feature, was actually causing more problems than it solved, in his opinion.
And you've gotten a lot of feedback, Bill, from users that are in similar situations.
Everybody pretty much talks about the same issues, compatibility problems, so Vista not playing well with certain in-house applications that are vital to the running of their business, and also a lot of these security features being overly complicated, UAC being an example of that.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about integration issues, and Microsoft has taken quite a big hit in terms of some of the early integration issues that early adopters have faced. But to come down on the side of Microsoft, any product that's in its first release is going to have some integration issues. Because it's not just Microsoft here that has to be on board, but it's many of Microsoft's partners and many of these other third party, whether it be a Cisco or whether it be network integration. These guys have to be also on their feet and get their products integrated into Vista. So it goes both ways.
You're absolutely right. And the IT professionals, that I interviewed over the course of this series, none of them came out and said, oh, dang, that Microsoft, here they go again. Everybody seems to agree that something had to be done to improve security, and most people believe that Microsoft has taken steps in the right direction. But sure, you're talking the most significant upgrade of the Windows operating system in a lot of years, and so it's very different from the XP Win 2000 universe most people are used to right now.
Which has been a fairly stable universe.
Yeah. Yeah, particularly XP. And a lot of applications that companies use today to do a lot of commerce online, for example, they designed these apps to work in the XP universe.
I've heard a lot about the UAC difficulties.
Yeah.
Go into a little more depth about that and how it became a problem for what you have in place and for what you need to have in place for your business to do what it does.
Well, we all like security, right? And that's all good and great and perfect. But I don't want, especially for our users, maybe me as an admin, I can, deal with it or whatever. But you got a user that's trying to, get a statement out for a CFO or something, and it keeps popping up every 2 seconds. Everything he tries to do, he goes to a web page, he opens a program, it's a pain. It can become very, very troublesome. And with that in mind, yes, more security is good, but I don't want it to. I don't want to keep clicking yes, I agree, yes, okay, yes, open. It was very, very troublesome to me. And again, we didn't try this on a regular user, but the way I look at it is, if me as an admin, I can't handle it. Imagine the regular user that already complains about new technologies and is not really interested in using Vista.
Well, that ends this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcast by going to our podcast landing page at certsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest news and information at our news page at certsecurity.com/news.
For now, I'm Rob Westervelt.
And I'm Bill Brenner. Have a great holiday, and we'll see you in 2008.